Hey, it's Thursday, October 6th. As you can tell, we are not in the office, and my voice is pretty much gone.
You're shot.
This is kind of the first I've tried to really talk today. Last night, we were at the NAMAD convention in Miami. Last night, you know, we were just doing the meet and greet, and everybody's out. And, you know, NAMAD knows how to do it, right?
So they bump some music, they bring all the food in, and it was a whole party thing.
So I basically spent the whole night yelling.
Right.
This far from somebody else. Right, and I woke up this morning, and it is gone. But it's been a pretty amazing time. We've been talking about the vibe around the NAMAD convention for an entire year since our first exposure to it last year.
Yep.
And this year, it seems like it's even ticked up a level.
Well, not just you, but everybody that's here has said, like, oh, there's a lot more people here. The energy around it seems even different. There's just a heavier amount of attention to the whole event.
Yep.
And for me, like, just seeing the way that people engage at this event is even a little bit different than some of the other conferences that we go to.
Yeah.
Like, just seeing the way that people kind of are familiar and engage with you is really neat.
There was kind of a big announcement last night. Took kind of the whole room by surprise. Damon Lester, president of NAMAD. He's been the president for a really long time.
Over 20 years.
Which is crazy because he only looks like he's about 26.
Right.
But so Damon announced that he's going to be stepping down as president. You know, and they named a successor. They've actually had an executive search committee going for the last year. And
Eugene Fields is stepping in. Younger guy, I think he's like in his mid-30s probably.
Yeah.
Comes from the nonprofit sector, specifically as it relates to, was it healthcare or?
It was a number of things. It was healthcare, but he worked for a big portion of career on the audit side and then on the strategic side. So it's funny, you may not know, Damon Lester also came from the accounting side.
I thought
another accountant. But one of the great things about this is, first of all, it was super sweet. When Damon, he looked at that, he brought him up and he said, this is your family now.
Right.
And he's
like, this is your family. They might not always treat you well, but you always got to treat them well. And it was, here's the thing, like the way that even Damon just gracefully kind of said, hey, I'm stepping out of this role, and the care that he took to mention people by name and thank them as mentors and you know, just people that have moved forward in the industry. And what I loved actually was before that, was all of the data and all of the stats and all of like just the general updates that he was going through as it pertains to FTC regulations. But last year was actually one of the quickest years for the acceleration of minority dealer owners in the U.S. So just to come off that as his last year and say, like, look, we're moving forward and the energy is such that it needs a new energy, and to bring in that new person is really cool. And he's like, I'm going to be his mentor. I'm still going to be around.
Yeah.
Actually, he's taking a role as the vice chair of the board. So that got voted in this year. So for all of you who know the NAMAD ecosystem, Damon's not going away. And he actually said, he was like, now I can say things that I really wanted to say.
Yeah. Without a doubt. You know, he always has something to say, but rarely says it.
Right.
Which is a really unique part of Damon. The more you know him, the more you realize, like, oh, he's kind of, I've always called him a sleeper.
Right.
Right.
Because
you see him and he's real chill and laid back. But when he lets go, it's like right on point and it is direct and it is to the target. So it's fun to be a part of that. We have a session today on the main stage with Alex Vetter, Alex Flores, Perry Watson.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're going to be talking about the future of retail automotive. We have a couple topics we're going to throw around. And it's just fun to welcome a lot of new people into the Esoto community, frankly.
And it's really nice to do that in Miami. We'll just say
that.
Yeah.
It is kind of humid there. Here.
Yes, absolutely.
There, here. As the sun's coming through the tree in the back.
Let's get into some news.
Okay, let's get into news. That's
some
why everybody's
today.
Here. Yes.
Today, it was really interesting. So Reuters put out a full article about some of the interesting things that are happening with self-driving cars, just kind of the continuum and what's happened. There was this really interesting story of a lady that kind of has had this experience with self-driving cars and like this humming UFO noise that happens outside her street because they all pass by there. But it's really interesting that McKinsey and Company, a big research firm, has come out and said essentially that the self-driving industry, this push to autonomy, has spent over $100 billion over the last 10 years, in research and development in autonomous driving technology. And so there's just been so much put into it, and the realization that there's just not a large swath of things happening in that world. Actually, there's been a reduction in autonomous fleets over the last year because some of the issues. One of the major issues, this was a really funny thing to me.
Left turns. I mean, it's kind of a major issue in any driving.
Right, but it was like, even in the article, it said, you know, they're having a hard time figuring out, quote unquote, unprotected left turns, which everybody else just calls a left turn. Right.
An engineer wrote that.
Right. So unless you're driving on a one-way street, you're in an unprotected left turn, meaning there's oncoming traffic. And that's just something that a lot of autonomous driving vehicles are having a hard time kind of navigating with.
They kind of like have that freeze moment where it's like, do I go really slow? No, don't go slow. Right. Do I go fast? Well, I'm programmed to not go fast when I turn.
Yes.
And it's back. There is an amazing quote from one of the initial developers of autonomous technology. I'm going to read it here. He says, you'd be hard-pressed to find another industry that's invested so many dollars in R&D and has delivered so little. Anthony Lewandowski says in an interview, forget about the profits. What's the combined revenue of the robo-taxi, robo-truck, robo-whatever companies? Is it $1 million? Maybe. Probably zero. I'd love to.
And this is the guy that basically has, like, he was the initial engineer that kind of set autonomous driving in its trajectory.
He's a little frustrated that $100 billion later,
it's just not
happening. We haven't gotten that thing across the goal line.
You know, I think that this is just a proof of the case in point that, like, this is a hard thing to accomplish, especially when you're mixing technology and human error in the same ecosystem, because that's like, if everything was autonomous driving, it could probably work because they could all talk to each other. But you're talking, you're utilizing
you still have people and bikes and all that.
Exactly.
And the truth is, the environment for autonomous driving is very, very structured. It's like a grid.
Yep.
Right. The ideal scenario: everything moves in this way or this way, and the ideal, you know, setup for human flourishing is the opposite of that.
Yep.
It's bikes and bike paths and pedestrians and ice cream and strollers, right? So those things are just not initially compatible. So
yeah, so we'll see what happens with that.
Now the people are winning. The people are beating the robots right now.
Yes! Yes! Well, we've got another story, and we don't have a segue button, so we apologize for everybody. But it has come out that a lot of transportation companies, especially the major movers in truck transportation and even train transportation of vehicles, are asking the Biden administration and Congress right now for some leverage when it comes to how much they can carry on a truck. So right now, truck limits on highways.
Leniency.
So right now, a truck can carry 80,000 pounds, which is kind of like, if you know what a full truck looks like with a whole bunch of SUVs or trucks, kind of caps out. Like, they push the limits of those trucks to get those going. Well, interestingly enough, recently, cars and trucks have climbed from an average of about 3,200 pounds. So you start to calculate, like, what's a truck weigh? How many do I get? Eight or nine, cars on a transport, 3,200. Well, it's gone from that to an average of 4,200 and is going up the more and more EV vehicles go into production. So we're talking an extra $1,000 per vehicle, which the ask is another 10%, which would bring that total to 88,000 pounds being on the road, allowing them to carry these EV vehicles.
It's a cascading issue.
Yeah.
So, like, batteries are just super heavy. And if you think about it, even when you're burning fuel in a vehicle, let's just talk about roads in general. Like, when you're driving on the highway and you see the divots in the roads,
yep.
And if you live in an area where there's road construction all the time, in the Northeast, there's always road construction. It's because over time, the weight and the cold, the freezing and thawing, those combined things destroy roads.
Yep.
But now we're talking, and even think about it, like a vehicle, when it's full of fuel, it gets lighter the further you drive. EVs, super heavy from the beginning. They stay heavy all the time. So it's just the straight vehicle. So the roads are already, like, I'm sure all the road nerds are calculating.
Well, that's the thing, like,
running down the hallway with a paper bus. This is going to be a problem.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and one of the cited notes was like, hey, If for some reason this doesn't change, we're going to have to put more trucks on the road, which is going to hamper supply chains, which is going to create more congestion on highways.
And it's the opposite of the environmental goals we're
exactly
trying to do.
Exactly.
So, every problem creates
every problem. Every action has an equal and opposite reaction.
True.
There it is.
I like to say every expert has an equal and opposite expert.
I love it.
That's what I feel like these days. All right, last story. I'll take this one because my hometown.
Let's go.
Syracuse, New York was just approved and selected as a site for Micron's new microchip manufacturing facility. They are going to invest, which is now the single largest private investment in New York State in history. $100 billion.
That's incredible.
A 1,300-acre facility that has four buildings to produce microchips in Syracuse, New York.
That has to make everyone from Syracuse just a wee bit proud.
Well, you know, you probably don't know this, but Syracuse used to have two automotive manufacturing plants. There was a GM plant and a Chrysler plant, both in Syracuse. They're both gone. There's also Carrier AC units, major manufacturing in Syracuse, gone. So over the last 20 years, Syracuse has taken a lot of knocks in manufacturing. So this is really, everyone's looking at this as kind of like, oh, it's going to be like that again.
Yeah. Right? Well, and it's a pretty tech-forward city. Like, I've learned recently that a lot of tech entrants come in through Syracuse because of, like, tech incubators and things like that. So,
and the city is kind of advanced, and it's not talked about because it hasn't been fully utilized yet. But it is a very connected city when it comes to, you know, like Wi-Fi streetlights and stuff that can actually pass data around. Microsoft actually put a hub there
to
do R&D on that. So Syracuse has a few sleeper things going on. I hope less people find out about it because I think it's a beautiful place.
All Paul really hopes is that they have a Nashville flight now opened up.
I said to Kyle, I hope this company has executives in Nashville so maybe they'll start opening up a direct flight so we can spend more time together.
Well, from the data, it's like what this is going to be is the eighth largest site for semiconductor in the U.S. And right now, the U.S. only contributes 12% of global production for chips, even in our tech forward. So when we look at this and just bringing more semiconductors, owning supply chains, this is something that a lot of manufacturers, both inside and outside of auto and in tech verticals, are saying, like, we have to have happen. Right, exactly. So I think this is a huge move for us. It's a story that's close to home because the Isotu team, half of it's there. So a big deal. But hey, thanks for hanging out with us today in Miami. We'll share some more as we go throughout the day with NAMAD. But hey, it's again, I'm like all week, I'm like, it's a five Saturday month. So if you're out there selling, servicing cars, keep at it, keep serving customers, and we'll see you tomorrow.